Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. I was in reading my inbox maybe the day before yesterday, 2-3 days ago.
Yeah.
And I saw that you were highlighted on a really interesting website. You were kind of the featured star on a website that you're particularly fond of.
Yeah, but they actually, it wasn't our show, but they just quoted me. I don't know why that is. We were,
because you're meaner is the answer.
We found ourselves quoted extensively on a website, consumerfreedom.com. We are in food publications all the time, and that's usually a good thing. The Center for Consumer Freedom is a corporate front group, by my estimation of it, and they're always pro-industry. Whether the industry is right or wrong, they're always pro-industry. So I've taken issue with them on a number of occasions, but sometimes I agree with them because, I don't know, I look at an issue and think, well, what's good for the planet? What's good for us? What's right? What's fair?
And politics make strange bedfellows.
Well, and so sometimes I think the Center for Consumer Freedom is making the right argument, mm-hmm. but they are not doing it
for the right reasons.
Well, right, exactly. Anyway, so I am prominently featured on this website, and it was about the show we did with Nancy Alexander. Her husband owns
Rockets.
Ex-husband owns the Houston Rockets.
So he owns the Houston Rockets. And when we talked about this, we talked about changing the basketballs from leather to
synthetic
compound.
And then changing back because, well, they didn't go in the basket as often. That was a problem. Anyway, but thing
Nancy
about,
Alexander and her husband were leading that charge.
But Nancy Alexander opened a vegetarian restaurant in Florida, and we were talking about how while opening a vegetarian restaurant is something we think is great and we support, the profits from that restaurant go to her.
Well, there are no profits from that restaurant yet.
Right.
But she intends them to.
It's designed to promote the animal rights cause. And when I say animal rights, I mean that so that you can't have meat, so that eating meat becomes illegal is the end result if you really just listen to her and extrapolate it out all the way.
Well, animal rights, like, you know, animals have rights to buy your house.
To vote.
And to vote, exactly.
No, that's not really the case. But you shouldn't be able to...
One dog, one vote, absolutely.
Keep pets against their will. You shouldn't be able to eat meat. And they quoted it pretty well. They said, the interviews are fascinating. Listen, if you're interested in whose money is talking when the animal rights movement moves its lips, check this out. And they did more research than I. At the end of its last fiscal year, Nancy Alexander's Animal Rights Foundation had, you want to guess how much they had in the bank?
I saw the article.
$73 million in the bank to be spread among activists who believe mostly in making meat unavailable.
Yeah, she like single-handedly tripled the PETA budget for the year.
They trace where the money went to. You can go to, and I don't support a lot of the things they do at consumerfreedom.com, but I think they get it right here. You can click on the article. Just look up my name, Francis Schott, or Restaurant Guys Radio, and you'll find this article. It's entitled Meet the New Animal Rights Sugar Mama. But so far, PETA received, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, received $15 million. And I'd like to point out that they believe in the ethical treatment of animals. They're not so good on the ethical treatment of human beings is one of their problems. And a whopping $20 million from Nancy has tripled the budget of PETA's what Consumer Freedom calls quasi-medical front group, which is called the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And that is...
Are those the guys with the Molotov cocktails or the guys with the spray cans that spray paint your
coat? These
are
physicians who provide the justification for all of the crazy things.
Oh, okay. I just was wondering which faction of PETA it was headed towards.
Not so good. Anyway, so we're not going to link to that on our site.
Because we don't want to send you by mistake to this particular website.
But if you're interested in listening to the broadcast, all of our old shows are available at restaurantguysradio.com and look for Nancy, N-A-N-C-I, Alexander, and you'll find it.
It was one of our more contentious interviews, there's no doubt about it. Well, you and Francis and I usually bring people on with whom we agree.
And I'd like to point out that we didn't blindside her.
Not at all. We told her what our positions were before she came on the show.
Let's talk about happier things. The season is upon us, and spring is here. We're celebrating the foods of spring in the restaurant. You know, Mark and I talk all the time about marking the change of seasons and marking the progression of time with the foods that are available, but it's so rapid locally here, starting now. So we have, like, on the menu at the restaurant in our homes, morel mushrooms are in, asparagus is in. Soon strawberries will come in.
That's right.
And that's sort of, I really enjoy the progression of the seasons. And
well, especially here in New Jersey, you just get to see all of these things, and they kind of charge through, just like Francis said, so quickly. 2-3 weeks, strawberry season's over, and you move on to the next thing. It's very exciting. The foods are spectacular.
Well,
they're like they are no other time of the year.
20 years ago, or 15 years ago when we started a restaurant, we weren't as in tune with the seasonal, with the march of the seasons, or locally. And now we have three farmers that we talk to on the phone on a regular basis who we know what's coming in their fields because we're getting ready for it. Because one of the things that we do, and I encourage people at home and restaurateurs to do this, something we started a couple of years ago, is when the strawberries come in, they're going to appear all over our menu. But we also have, we're ready to go to put up strawberries, to put up fruit throughout the summer. It's a really cool thing when in January we pulled out our preserved strawberries to throw on the menu. And they were local strawberries.
And I'll tell you, what I would rather have any time is local, put-up strawberries, put-up at the height of the season strawberries, than strawberries from California or Guatemala or wherever. They simply, they're not the same kind of fruit. They don't have these same kind of intense flavors.
Well, and when you do it at home, they're yours, you know? And frankly, when you have, if you have a restaurant, and we know a lot of restaurateurs listen to the show, and a lot of people in the business listen to the show, a lot of chefs listen to the show, when you put up your own stuff, that is indeed your own all year round, and a really special thing that speaks of a specific place. And that's great when people come over to your house or if you give gifts. And also, if you have a restaurant, what you want is a sense of place. Hey, listen, we have a very interesting guest coming on the show. Marco Pierre White is the youngest chef to ever achieve Michelin 3 stars, which is the highest ranking for the Michelin Guide. He was also the first British chef to achieve 3 Michelin star restaurant in England. We're talking with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 14:50, the time is 11:15. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Marco Pierre White is the London restaurateur who was the first to get 3 Michelin stars in London. He has several restaurants in London. His book is The Devil in the Kitchen, Sex, Pain, Madness, and the Making of a Great Chef.
Chef, welcome to the show.
Hello there. Good to be on your show.
I think it's great that you've taken the time to talk to us from, as they say, across the pond. One of the things that I've read that you said a while back that I think is really great and love for you to comment on is a quote, "I'm in the business of selling a night out, not a plate of gastronomy." What do you mean by that?
Well, firstly, if you look at the average person, they want a night out. It's about lifestyle. And if I'm going out to dinner, I tend to be going out with people I want to be with, my friends or my family. And what's important is that I have a great evening. And so I go to a restaurant where they can create an environment which I want to sit in, where then I can be myself. And then food and wine is a byproduct of what I'm going out for. Is I'm going out to have a fantastic time with my friends. And now give me some wine, give me some good food at an affordable price. That's all I want. I was at the top end of gastronomy for a long time, and all I ever did was cook for strangers. You know, do those people really enjoy themselves? I don't know. But, you know, if you hit that middle market, you deliver glamour at an affordable price point, create an environment which they want to sit in and be in, that's success for me. Is I think how many times I've sat in great restaurants and I've been dictated to. Yeah, I've not felt comfortable within those environments. It's not where I want to be at, and I don't think the majority of people want to be there.
You know, I think what one of the interesting things that's related to the point that you bring is that society has really changed, and restaurants have become a more important part of many people's lives and a part of society, and so I think there's a greater need for that sort of the restaurant that you're speaking of, don't you think?
Well, I think that's people's wants. I mean, why does good food have to be expensive? Why does it have to be posh? You know, there's no guarantees how long we're going to live in this world. And I think, you know, let's live life and enjoy life while we're here. with our friends, with our family.
I agree completely. And I want to ask you to address, there are rumors floating about the business that you have restaurants in London, you have a restaurant in Dubai, that you might one day consider opening something in the United States. Is that a possibility?
Well, I had a meeting in Las Vegas last week, and I've agreed to do the deal. Because while I was doing my book tour around America, I slipped off from Vegas. I slipped off to Vegas to have a chat about a site, which I've agreed to do now. And I said I would, when I get back to London, then I would work on the deal itself.
Well, now,
and then when I was in Miami, I slipped off to Jamaica, and I've agreed to do the deal in Jamaica as well. So when I get back to London, I've got Jamaica and Las Vegas to sort out.
And what kind of restaurants will they be?
They'll be restaurants which sell fun. They sell a night out. They'll be just very good, honest restaurants, which deliver a standard at a price point. And what I always say in London, is what's important is for every pound somebody spends, you give them more than anybody else. And I suppose in America, if I was going to come to America, I'd like to be able to give people more for every dollar they spend than anybody else.
You know,
I think we live in a world of... Sorry.
That's okay, go ahead.
No, I think we live in a world where people look for value. People are more educated now than they were, say, 30 years ago, 20 years ago. And there's so many more options now.
They certainly have more choices, is what I was going to say.
And you have to be honest. You have to give people what they want. And I'm a great believer that you control an environment by being subservient. You don't control an environment by dictating to people. And that's the problem with the high-end restaurants. They dictate you and make you feel privileged that you have a table. They seem to forget that you've worked very hard for your money. And, you know, I want to give my money to people who are going to appreciate my custom.
Mm-hmm. I think the world is changing in that way, and I definitely agree that more and more. But even in the high-end restaurants, I'm seeing a much more courteous service than I saw 10 years ago. I'm seeing people be much more giving. Even in the super premium restaurants, I'm seeing more and more giving to the customer, more and more understanding of the customer.
Well,
that's good, isn't it? That's a good thing. I think because also, I mean, if I go back 10 years ago in London, people had to wear a collar and tie and a suit for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Why should you have to dress terribly smart to eat good food? I don't understand it. As long as somebody's clean and tidy, well-dressed, casual smart, as I call it, let them sit down at your table and eat their dinner. I mean, the greatest restaurants in the world to me are the restaurants which are very democratic in the sense that they have a cross-sector of society under their roof.
When we come back, we're going to be talking more with Marco Pierre White about his restaurants in London, and we've just scooped everybody and told you about his coming restaurant in the United States. Back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. And our guest today is Marco Pierre White. He's one of the top chefs in London and in England and around the world. He's about to open some restaurants in the United States, which we've just found out about. And he's written a book called The Devil in the Kitchen, Sex, Pain, Madness, and the Making of a Great Chef. Now, why a book, Chef?
Why, I do think that if you've been given in life, you have a duty to share what you've been given. If you've been given opportunity, create opportunity. If you've been given a talent, show off your talent. If you've been told a story, you've lived a story, then share your story. I feel that you have a duty to share what you've experienced. And what I try to do with the devil in the kitchen is touch people in many areas of their lives. If there's a young person who suffered misfortune or tragedy as a young child, maybe that book will, maybe they'll be able to relate to it and they'll be able to take something out of it and unravel a bit of their confusion. If they've got illusions and dreams of being a great cook, well, it gives them a little insight into what it takes. You know, and every so often you might laugh, you might find it funny, who knows, but it's about delivering a message. But all I can do in my life is scratch the surface of it and give people a little insight into the world that I came from and my story. And you know, ever since I was a little boy, I always loved stories. I'm a dyslexic, so I don't read. I suffer from word blindness. And so, you know, it's, you know, I think, you know, people who may have suffered similar misfortunes and tragedies as I did may relate to it. People who want to go down that long road to win three missions themselves, well, it gives them an insight into what it takes.
I think one of the things that, well, I know that one of the things we talk about all the time is that it takes a person of a certain, well, not a certain temperament, but a group of temperaments. And we do a bunch of restaurant consulting, and we tell people all the time, if you don't need to be in the restaurant business for emotional reasons, you probably should be in a different business. I think the people in the restaurant business have a different temperament, and I think that's reflected in your book. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, you know, is the great thing about the restaurant world, it is the Foreign Legion. It accepts everybody through its doors, arms open, asks no questions. It doesn't matter what world you came from, what tragedies or misfortunes you've suffered. Again, you know, maybe you've had a bit of a checkered path, but it still gives you an opportunity to better yourself as a person, to create opportunity, to create security for you and your family. It's a world where you can express yourself. When I was a boy, it was a perfect world for me to go into. I discovered myself within the world of restaurants and hotels.
Funny, it's okay, we have a little bit of a time delay here. But it's funny when you talk about the restaurant business being the Foreign Legion, because that is very apt. That is quite apt. And we have sometimes you have people with a checkered past, and sometimes you have people with a checkered present. When we come back after the news, we're going to be talking with Marco Pierre White, three-star Michelin chef, author of The Devil in the Kitchen, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today our guest is Marco Pierre White. He is the Michelin three-star chef, London restaurateur, and author of The Devil in the Kitchen, Sex, Pain, Madness, and the Making of a Great Chef. Marco, before the break, we were talking about how you made a great analogy. You said the restaurant business is like the Foreign Legion. People with a checkered past, people from nobility, you can join, as long as it's a strict meritocracy. But there's something about the people addicted to the rush of working in a kitchen a la carte. And you talk in your book, you had a rough childhood. You lost your mother when you were young, and you went into the kitchen. And something you wrote that I thought was very interesting. You said, I was already hooked on the security of the kitchen, that you felt safe there. Talk to us about that.
Well, in the world, when I remember, I started in the 70s cooking, and it was the tail end of a Escoffier's world. And in those days, people didn't drift around like they do today and seek knowledge like they do today. In those days, they seek security. And a kitchen environment was like a family. You know, if you were struggling, they helped you. You know, it gave you opportunity to express yourself. You know, I put my career in the hands of my head chef, and he looked after my early career. And when I'd done my time, he helped me move on. And I felt very comfortable in that world because my family had been, my family at home had been broken because of my mother's death. As a young boy, when I was 10, my father got lung cancer. His, half of my family were in Italy, half of them were in England. I had a very unhinged family, and the restaurant world created that security. And that was the beauty of it. And I would recommend any young boy or girl to go into that industry, but just make sure you put your hands in the person who's going to protect you and look after you and guide your career.
You know, I think the restaurant world has changed much as a reflection of society. There seems to me that there is less and less, and I'll call them loyalties because I don't have a better word for it, fewer and fewer loyalties between company and employee to company everywhere in the world, not just restaurants, but also restaurants at the same time. People go, they spend 3 months in a restaurant, and they're off to get the next restaurant on their resume.
Well, let's be honest. If ambition is the most dangerous occupation in the world. And when I was a boy, I went for my interviews, and, you know, I went for my interviews. I never asked how much I was going to earn. I never asked how many hours I was going to work. I did what was expected. I prayed that I got the job. And I worked with great people. I worked with those heavyweights of gastronomy. And when I say worked with them, I cooked for them in the kitchen. They weren't figureheads, because in those days, chefs weren't celebrities. Today, every boy who knocks on your door has a dream of being a celebrity. They want to be famous. They want to write books. They want to be on TV, you know. What I would recommend every young boy, every young girl, is go and work in the right establishment for the first 5 or 6 years of your career. Keep your head down. Learn your job. Learn your trade. That will stay with you forever. That will stay with you forever and a day. It'll never desert you. Build your foundation, and your foundation must be born out of knowledge. And, you know, what you're not being paid, you're getting back in knowledge. And when you're of a certain age, you can take that knowledge and trade it in, which then will create security for you and your family.
You know, one of the things that I think is very interesting about the way kitchens are structured, and this changes sometimes, but is going through some change, but when you talked about the security of the kitchen, one of the things that I find intriguing about great kitchens is there is a discipline and hierarchy in great kitchens. And within that discipline and hierarchy, there is security and there is the ability to learn. But a lot of young cooks today don't want to exist in that sort of very strict regimen. Do you think a strict regimen in a kitchen, a strict power structure in a kitchen?
It's essential. You know where you stand. You know what your position is. You have people to admire. If there's no structure, there's no discipline. If there's no discipline, there's no positioning. You know, it's just a job. You know, it's like going into the army. You start at the bottom, and you put in the hours, you put in the time, and you work your way up the ranks. And, you know, you earn your respect. And, you know, when I was a young boy, and my head chef may have been harsh on me, he may have said something I didn't approve of, I felt I'd been dealt an injustice, I still said, yes, chef.
Mm-hmm.
I never questioned, because my career was in his hands.
You know, the other thing is very interesting about this, and a lesson that I think people are reluctant to learn, because here in America, anyway, we have young people who graduate culinary school, and they feel they want to work in a number of places 9 months at a time, you know, to put them all on their resume,
and then open their own place.
One of the things I try to talk to young people in the front of the house and the back of the house when they come in is that you're not just learning whether it's about wine if you're the sommelier or how to prepare a dish if you're a cook, but you're learning about an organization and how an organization functions and how to lead people and interact with people. And you can only learn that if you stay for a while. Would you agree with that, Chef?
If I would recommend anyone to stay a minimum of 12 months within any establishment. And, you know, if they feel that there's more to learn after 12 months, then stay a little bit longer. But I think for your first, you know, I think you have to put in the hours, and you have to work in establishments with consistent and equal reputations. You can't be a butterfly. You can't go high end, low end, try and get back in the high end. You've got to be honest with yourself and say, what do I want? Why am I doing it? Where do I want to be in 10 years' time? My dream as a boy was to be a saucier, because that was the coolest job. Not to be the head chef, not to be the sous chef, was to be the boy on the sauce, because that was the toughest job. That was that was like being the striker for a football team.
One of the things you talk about in your book that we touch on all the time is, I think as young people, and especially in the kitchen, pick up more and more skills and learn how to execute more and more dishes and sauces and techniques. That's one set of skills that comes about. But you draw a distinction between a great cook and a chef. Will you talk to us about the difference between a cook and a chef?
Well, a great cook is a person who spends his life cooking. He's at the stove. You know, a great chef is someone who can manage an organization. He can manage the team. He can deliver a standard through management and do the paperwork which is necessary. I was never a great chef. I was a cook. And I stayed a cook, and I stayed behind my stove. I remember the day I won my 3 stars in the Michelin Guide. The head inspector, when he came to tell me, before the guide came out, I walked into the doors, and he said, Marco, never forget what made you great. And what he was saying was, stay behind your stove, stay cooking, don't live a lie. Because remember, and when I retired, those words came back to me. I had 3 options. My first option was, to continue working 16 to 18 hour days, 6 days a week. Leaving home in the morning and kissing my children goodbye. Going home in the evening and kissing them goodnight while they're in their bed. That was option number one. Option number two was to live a lie and pretend I cook when I don't. Continue to charge high prices. Question everything I stood for. Question my integrity. My third option was to pluck up the inner strength. To give back my staff, to let go of my status, and accept the next day I was unemployed. But, you know, I had to do that for myself. Sorry.
When we come back, I want to talk more about how your life has changed in that kind of metamorphosis that you've gone through.
Marco Pierre White, historically one of the best chefs in London and in the world. His book is The Devil in the Kitchen, Sex, Pain, and Madness, and the Making of a Great Chef. You can find out how to pick it up on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is famous chef Marco Pierre White, also author of The Devil in the Kitchen, Sex, Pain, and Madness, and The Making of a Great Chef.
You know, Chef, one of your former students, Gordon Ramsay, has taken a lot of heat from us on this show about the way he handled himself on a show called Hell's Kitchen. You're soon going to be doing Hell's Kitchen yourself. Tell us a little bit about how you want to do that differently than he.
Well, it's not me setting out to do something differently. I was asked by the English press what would my approach be, and my approach would always be the same. I'm there to inspire people, not to belittle people. It's got to be inspirational. It's got to be educational. It's got to be interesting. I want to see food. I want to see people struggle and people help them. I want to see people all wanting to win that show. You know, it's their show. I'm just a chef.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm there to inspire them, to share my knowledge, and, you know, to deliver a standard to 70 people every night for 3 weeks.
You know, one of the things that I found very interesting about that show that we really objected to was, I mean, a kitchen's a very tough place, and sometimes in some kitchens voices are raised. That's not our style of kitchen, but I understand that they have a place in the world. But some we have encountered in our careers, no one who worked for us, well, for more than a few minutes, chefs who do like to yell and scream and make a lot of noise. But if that's not done in the service of making someone better, if you have a line cook who makes a mistake, and then you scream at that line cook and you cripple him or her for the rest of service, what good have you done?
Is you have to raise your voice, one, to deliver the orders, but two, to keep everyone concentrated. And it's not what you say in life, it's how you say it. And you know you have to keep your team concentrated, disciplined, and inspired. To do a busy service at that three-star level is a military maneuver, and you have to keep them all in line. I can't say in your own time to sea bass. And John, when you've got a moment, if we could have the beef for table five. I'm sorry, you know. Can you imagine? And Gordon, when you're doing nothing, come over and give us a hand. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't happen like that in a kitchen. You've got 15 seconds to bring that table together, whether that's a table of two, whether that's a table of eight. With maybe eight different dishes. You have to coordinate that. You are the conductor. You have to bring all those plates together. You can't sit in a restaurant and two main courses arrive, and then another two arrive, and another two arrive. You can't do that. You have to respect the customer. The customer doesn't need to know what's going wrong out back. All he cares is that he wants his dinner to a standard all at once.
You know, one of the things I thought was very interesting about that show is they talked about, in its prior incarnation, not in what's coming with you there, and I can't wait to see you on it, but they talked about how, you know, it's all about the customer, what I was thinking when Gordon Ramsay, the prior host of the show, would take time off to scream at someone and belittle them and call them names, I'm thinking, you don't have time for that. You don't have time to call somebody a name.
It's a one-dimensional show, you know. The last time I saw Gordon, I said, Gordon, did someone steal the bolts out of your neck? I mean, someone said to me in America, Marco, what was your greatest creation? I said, Gordon Ramsay. I mean, someone said, what do you think of Gordon? I said, he looks like a cross between Patrick Swayze and a ventriloquist dummy. I mean, you know, if he wants to go down that road, then that's fine. But I will not question my integrity like I never have.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I'm stepping back into the ring is because, you know, when I watch that show, it doesn't make me want my children to go into the kitchen. It doesn't make my daughter in the kitchen. What I want to do is I want Mum and Dad at home thinking, what are we going to do with young George? What are we going to do with young Jill? You know, and they see me on TV inspiring people and making people want to do it. And you know something? It's a great world. And the problem with that program is they don't give a true insight into what goes on in a real kitchen.
Well, there was no teaching. I'll tell you because I saw the show before Francis did, and one of the things that I pointed to Francis to was take a look at the fact that he's asking people to make things that they've never made before, without instructing them as to how he wants it done.
Well, I was told by the London people, he turned up for an hour in the day and turned up for an hour in the evening, and they said, Marco, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'll turn up in the morning and I'll work all day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They said, Marco, that's what your boys say. Because you know something? Even today I'm sitting here with my cuffs undone. It's one of my little traits. I never fasten my cuffs. Because you know, you have to roll up your sleeves. You have to get dirty. You have to bail in with the boys. And if I'm in the shit, excuse me swearing, then they're all in the shit. I'm with them. I'm not shouting at them. I'm taking them by the hand and helping them get out of it. We're all in that boat together. We've got a row together. You know, my father always taught me, nail your colours to the mast. It's an English expression. It means stand up for what you believe in. And, you know, I've been condemned many times in my life as being controversial, and that's fine. I'm not controversial because I always put foundation behind whatever I do. Okay, being naughty is another question. And that's another radio show. A man being a man or a woman, they must fight and stand up for what they believe in. Because I came from the most humble side of society.
Well,
and you know, everyone deserves a good life. Everyone deserves respect.
And Marco Pierre White is going to open a restaurant in the United States. You heard it first here on The Restaurant Guys. His book is The Devil in the Kitchen, Sex, Pain, Madness, and the Making of a Great Chef. Marco, thank you so much for taking the time to be
on the
show.
Thanks so much, Chef.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be back
We love America.
We'll be back. We do, too. We'll be back in just a moment. Central
Trust
Jersey,
me.
1450. The time is 1155. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis, the stage left, and Catherine Lombardi. We were just talking with Marco Pierre White. That's a big scoop for us, by the way. Marco
Pierre White. Opening a restaurant in Las Vegas and in Jamaica, announced it on this show just now.
The sound quality wasn't always the best. When you're talking on an international line, sometimes it doesn't happen. But
you know, Marco Pierre White, one of the things he just said on the show in that very last segment was, you know, he's really got a reputation for this as well, that he stands up for what he believes in. This is a guy, and you heard it on this show as well, just not afraid to tell you, never has been afraid to tell you what he thinks about anything. And, you know, he clearly has mellowed out as he's matured, because he's a guy who has a reputation for, you know, being one of those yellers, one of those screamers, one of those chefs.
I think one of the most interesting things is when we talked about the Michelin Guide, getting 3 stars in the Michelin Guide is that's the highest rating you can get. He was the first English chef to get 3 stars in the Michelin Guide. When he reached a point where he said, I'm not going to cook the food every day or, you know, 5 days a week, he turned in his Michelin stars and he left. Now, that's a pretty big thing to give back. Those stars are worth
a lot of money.
Say a lot of money for each star.
Millions and millions of dollars.
And but he made the choices that he believes were right in his life and right for his restaurant. And what he did there in getting those stars was admirable. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying the people who make a different choice don't also make respectable choices. But I think in walking away from that at the time and in the manner he chose to do so, I think was respectable as well.
So how do you think about he felt about the way that Gordon handled himself on Hell's Kitchen?
Similarly to the way that we felt that Gordon handled himself in Hell's Kitchen. If you haven't seen the show Hell's Kitchen, you can find it. I forget the network it was on, but it's one of those reality cooking shows that Mark and I just detested because of the way the host handled. He was just a yeller and a screamer.
I'll tell you, and again, yelling and screaming in a kitchen sometimes happens, and Marco talked about, you know, the militaristic way a kitchen sometimes has to run.
But it's got to be to a positive end. It's
exactly.
Not to demean or to diminish people. And, you know, it's because of guys like him that our society has turned around and respects our profession, because when we were 20 years old, we had to lie to our grandmothers and tell them that we were going to do something else, and we weren't still in the restaurant business.
Too true.
Finally figured it out. Hope you've enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450 times 12 noon.